From NPR and the Futuro Media Group, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today, language. It's not just English or Spanish or speech or writing. It's how we share and connect. We'll hear how growing up poor can lead to the word gap.
By the end of the age of three, children who were born into poverty will have heard 30 million fewer words than their more affluent peers.
And we meet a television composer who communicates through the language of music.
There's a really cool chord progression that I created for Matador. It's so simple. It's dun-di-dun, dun-di-dun. That's it.
Plus, BuzzFeed talks to us about Obama's doublespeak on immigration reform. All this and more coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No se vayan. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. This week, we're talking about language, the language of politics, the language around race, the language of music. But first, we're going to start our show at the point when language begins. There's been a lot of coverage on early childhood education and universal pre-K, but studies are showing that some children may be falling behind even before the age of four, because of something called the word gap. Here's Latino USA producer Antonia Cerejido.
In a room bursting with pretty dolls and pink stuffed animals, Bárbara Bermudo sits with her two daughters.
Muestran que dedicando por lo menos 15 minutos al día para hablarles, cantarles, leerles en cualquier idioma.
Bermudo is an anchor at Univision's news program Primer Impacto. In this public service announcement, she's encouraging parents to take at least 15 minutes a day to talk, sing, or read to their children in any language. It's part of an effort to close the word gap. That's right, the word gap.
By the end of the age of three, children who were born into poverty will have heard 30 million fewer words than their more affluent peers.
Dr. Dana Suskin is the director of the 30 Million Words Initiative, an education and research program in Chicago.
And this had nothing to do with race or ethnicity. This was really socioeconomic status, which is education and income.
This is why the word gap matters. The moment a baby is born, their brain is already beginning to develop. That is why these early language interactions are so crucial. Scientists can actually measure the word gap, or the number of words spoken at home. They use a little device called the LENA, which stands for Language Environment Analysis. Dr. Adriana Weisletter, a developmental psychologist, introduces us.
Great.
So that is actually the LENA. That's the LENA recorder.
This is it? Wow, it's small, smaller than
it's
I expected.
It's really small.
And it's designed so that it fits perfectly in the pocket of this little vest.
The LENA is about the size of a credit card. Babies wear it at chest level. Not only does it count or record words, it can also analyze what it records. The LENA is able to differentiate all the different kinds of sounds that are heard in a baby's environment. This includes
background noise, TV, and other kinds of electronic sounds.
Remember, boys? Think of me as Paul Newman.
Distant speech. Silence.
But the most important sound is meaningful speech.
Speech that's actually near the child, you know, close to the child, and probably directed to the child.
The LENA divides meaningful speech into a series of categories. You can think of it as
a language pedometer. So just like a regular pedometer counts the number of steps that you take in a day, a LENA counts the number of words a child is exposed to and how many conversations they have with their caregiver or parent.
It's not just the number of words spoken to babies, but the quality of words spoken.
In some families, a lot of the speech to children is what they called business talk. The function of the speech is to get the child to do something, right? So they're commands or imperatives.
Look, you have to eat it now.
Go in your room.
Don't touch this here.
That happens in all families. It has to happen, right? Parents have to get their kids to do things. But when a high proportion of the speech that children hear is composed of those kinds of business talk or imperatives, then that means that they're not getting a lot of the other rich talk and conversations.
Like this.
Your feet? These are your little feet? They're excited, I can tell. You're lifting them up in the air.
Who's that in the mirror? Reagan! Reagan's in the mirror.
Now, some people call this baby talk, and it has sort of a bad reputation. But really, it's not gaga goo goo. It's really changing your voice to being sing-songy and sort of stretching out the words. So when you hear a mother saying, oh, does Johnny want his milk? That's really, she's saying it in a way that his brain is able to process it.
Still, a device like the Lena can't close the word gap all by itself.
Just like, you know, a pedometer will not, you know, change the obesity and health crisis in the country. You know, we can't put everything on a piece of technology.
One way Dr. Susskind's 30 million words initiative tries to close the gap is by actually going into homes. On top of going over the results from Lena recordings, 30 million words has created a curriculum for parents. It includes videos modeling ways caregivers should talk to their baby.
Look at a lollipop, Mama. What's under it?
Gonna brush your teeth, Demarius? Yes? Hey.
Families that speak more than one language at home can face a special challenge. What language should they speak to their kids in? Here's what Dr. Susskind thinks.
It's not just a moral and right thing, but the science is clear that parents and caregivers should be talking and interacting with their children in their native language. It does no good to be speaking a language that you don't feel comfortable with.
In fact, 30 million words is adapting its curriculum into Spanish.
Having a higher vocabulary, even if it's in Spanish, still makes kids be more prepared for school.
Why is that? Talking a lot to your child is about more than just teaching them words. It's helping them understand basic concepts.
If you know, in Spanish, the words for horse and dog and house and barn, you know those words in Spanish, but you also know a lot of relations about those things. You know that dogs and horses are animals and that a lot of dogs live in houses because they're domestic animals and, you know, horses might live in barns or, you know, lots of different things.
Those relationships and concepts aren't tied to a specific language. They're universal.
With the too small to fail.
Even politicians have caught on to the need for parents to engage with their children more.
We want to help close the word gap in America by reminding everyone, from pediatricians to parents to grandparents, to spread the message on how they can make talking, reading, and singing everyday activities.
That's Hillary Clinton presenting her initiative Too Small to Fail. It focuses on closing the word gap, including among Latinos. Anne O'Leary, who's part of Clinton's initiative, explains why.
Hispanic children were less likely to be read to every day when they were very young, sung to, talked to. And so we saw that white children were being read to twice as much as Hispanic children in the very early days.
O'Leary says it's not just a civil rights issue. Closing the gap is an economic imperative.
But when you realize we are not providing them with the educational foundation to be able to thrive in school, it really then has an impact on our economic workforce of the future.
Bridging the word gap is not about getting babies ready to read Don Quixote by the age of 4. It's about setting up building blocks so when every child gets to school, they're ready to learn. For Latino USA, I'm Antonia Cerejido.
Ya verás que por ti se pelea.
Y hay...
Now, ordinarily, queridos, we bring you some words of wisdom, a little bit of sabiduría, at the end of our program. But today, we're going to mix it up a little and sprinkle some wisdom throughout our show. So we called up our friend and Latino USA contributor, Guy Garcia, who's the president of New Mainstream Initiatives at Ethnifax, a market research company. You've heard him on our By the Numbers segments. Today, he's here to help us re-examine and redefine some language in our rapidly changing country. Here's Guy on what multicultural means today.
Historically, multicultural was describing Asians, African Americans, and Hispanics who were on the fringes of American society, who were a minority, who either were succeeding or failing to acculturate or assimilate into this idea of an American mainstream. There's now a multicultural majority, and that majority includes people of color, but also a percentage of non-Hispanic whites who are also culture edge by proximity, by marriage, by cohabitation. So I would define multicultural now as not just Asians, African Americans, and Hispanics, but also non-Hispanic white people who are multicultural by interest, by inclination, by choice, often by marriage. You know, Americans, a big percentage of them have relatives, spouses, in-laws, and certainly friends of different races and ethnicities. And so we include them because they share the same attitudes, the same values, many of the same behaviors. We know, for example, that a large percentage of people that are buying, say, Hispanic groceries and ingredients at the store are not Hispanic. The first Anchorman has a great scene where you have all the representatives of different networks, and the guy from PBS shows up, who's Tim Robbins.
Not so fast, you ingrates! No commercials! No mercy!
Yeah! They're ready to have kind of a West Side Story kind of face-off, and all of a sudden, Ben Stiller shows up shaking maracas and says,
Spanish language news is here. Tonight's top story. The sewers run red with Burgundy's blood. Yeah, yeah!
And then Tim Robbins says,
Looks like we got ourselves a bilingual blood fest.
And to me, and I noticed, I saw it, that movie when it came out in New York, and I was surprised to see it on the screen that way. But then the whole audience, and it certainly wasn't just Latinos in the audience, got the joke. And to me, that was a signal that Spanish language media had sort of joined the circus. But since then, it's happened in every possible way, from music, of course, at the ballot box, and on and on.
We'll hear more from Guy Garcia later on in our program. But first, coming up on Latino USA.
El Parque used to be a place where you just went and hung out with your friends after work. Now it's what you avoid, you know, because you don't know anybody at the park.
Gentrification through the words of an artist. Stay with us. No se vayan.
Soy lo que dejaron, soy toda la sobra de lo que se robaron. Un pueblo escondido en la cima, mi piel es de cuero, por eso aguanta cualquier clima. Soy una fábrica de humo, mano de obra campesina para tu consumo. Frente de frío en el medio del verano, el amor en los tiempos del cólera, mi hermano. El sol que nace y el día que muere, con los mejores atardeceres. Soy el desarrollo en carne viva, un discurso político sin saliva. Las caras más bonitas que he conocido, soy la fotografía de un desaparecido, la sangre dentro de tus venas, soy un pedazo de tierra que vale la pena, una canasta con frijoles, soy Maradona contra Inglaterra, anotándote dos goles. Soy lo que...
Todos están esperando que yo llegue allá a cantar, y aunque es muy cerca de casa, no
tengo cómo llegar. El combustible está muy caro para llevar el maquinón. Si lo guío de aquí a la esquina, voy a pagar un montón. Las horas se van volando y en casa hoy no me quedaré, ya que no hay mucho remedio.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and today we're talking language. And right now, we're going to talk a little bit about political doublespeak.
Read my lips. No new taxes.
Remember that gem from George H.W. Bush? Or how about this one from Ronald Reagan?
A few months ago, I told the American people I did not trade arms for hostages. My heart and my best intentions still tell me that's true. But the facts and the evidence tell me it is not.
So, presidential doublespeak is nothing new. We're just going to update the picture a little bit, going back to June with President Barack Obama in the White House Rose Garden.
I'm beginning a new effort to fix as much of our immigration system as I can on my own, without Congress.
The president spoke defiantly, asking Eric Holder and other administration officials for recommendations for action. And for a moment, it seemed like he was ready even to pick a fight.
If Congress will not do their job, at least we can do ours. I expect the recommendations before the end of the summer, and I intend to adopt those recommendations without further delay.
But no kind of executive action, which President Obama promised by the end of the summer, has happened. Joining us to dissect the doublespeak in politics and comb through some of your responses on social media is Adrian Carrasquillo. He's editor for Latino coverage and a reporter at BuzzFeed. Thanks for joining us on Latino USA, Adrian.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
All right. So let's step back a minute, Adrian. What was your understanding of what the president wanted to or hoped or intended to do when he made this promise back in June?
Well, so what was interesting was when the president started talking about kind of the narrative that the unaccompanied minors crisis, or that the politics changed. If you think back to June 30th, unaccompanied minors was in full bloom crisis mode. And so sort of like where we were at that point was, things are going to happen. I'm going to do it at the end of the summer. Some people think August, and no, probably September. But latest, I mean, I heard was October 1st. People really expected it to happen, and they really feel that Obama has kind of let them down a few times.
All right. So you as a journalist, did you believe the words that he was saying, that something is going to happen? Did you believe it?
Yeah, because I have to say, you know, I've been reporting all year and really just been sort of watching at the forefront. The activists really did a lot to push him. I mean, when Janet Mudigia called him the deporter-in-chief, you know, she's the president of NCLR, you could really see, I mean, first of all, Obama hates that term. He hates it. He was furious. He was trying to hold in his anger. But, you know, you really felt, all right, well, now there's been some movement, even pushing him to get the review.
So we actually reached out on Facebook and Twitter, and we asked for some feedback from Latino USA fans. And here's some of what they had to do, and I want to get your reaction to this. So this is Imelda and what she had to say on Facebook.
How can the Democrats be afraid of immigration reform when time and again polls say that most Americans support legalization? This is absurd in a democracy. It is absurd that the party that does not support immigration reform may win the midterm elections when people do not support that. It is ridiculous.
So your response to that?
I think that when you're talking the midterm election, the president's advisors had polling that a couple of these Senate Democrats were, you know, 2 points their race, which basically could go either way. And so that's where the fear comes in. And that's where it comes in of saying, hey, look, we don't have a lot of Latino voters in our place. The only of the vulnerable Democrats in Colorado, where they have a large percent of the electorate. But otherwise, they're basically saying, you know, we need to worry first about our election, about not losing the Senate. I feel like they've really backed themselves into the corner where there's people who still say, well, we've been lied to so many times. Why should we believe them now? But I think in this case, he really is going to act before the end of the year.
You believe that?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you and I differ on that. But let's hear. Now, this is what Luis had to say also on Facebook.
I think immigration reform should be done through the legislative process. That is, Congress should pass a law. Executive order is not legitimate in my view. I think many Hispanic advocates are not realistic when it comes to this issue. They're not willing to accept that most Americans have a problem giving permits and amnesty to millions of people who broke the law. And the entitlement attitude that many take does not help either.
All right. So in this post, Luis is talking about amnesty, another one of those hot button political words, given that our show is on language. So what's your sense about this? I mean, Latinos who say, look, no executive action, do it through legislative.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think you see that among Latinos, is this idea, it's not homogenous, it's not everybody's united. I think that what has been interesting and what certainly is not up for debate is that there's been a bipartisan agreement that the immigration reform system is broken. You have to remember, if there's anything about the broad immigration reform coalition, is that it's exactly that. I mean, business and labor and faith and tech companies. So I think that that's what definitely gets lost. And the most polarizing part of this is the amnesty part. So that's the part that always gets talked about.
So what's your sense from your readers on BuzzFeed? Do you have a sense of what they would like to see Hillary do on the question of immigration?
Mm-hmm. I think that Hillary has talked at different events, and what you see her doing now is she holds back. She looks at the politics of a situation. She did this with unaccompanied minors. She did this with Ferguson. She speaks up, but I think because of her place, where she is considered the front runner, she doesn't need to be the first one to the podium to say something. I think she's being very measured. What's going to happen afterwards? What's she going to do afterwards? That's going to be super interesting.
And this is what Belen said to us on Facebook.
To me, it says less Latino votes.
So doesn't that breed a sense of apathy, of hands up, they don't hear me, they don't see me, I'm invisible, which is what so many times, I know you and I have both heard this from Latinos out there. It's just like, we feel invisible in the media, in politics, we feel invisible.
Mm-hmm. I think that it's true. You know, I think that that one thing that's interesting is for people that cover the Latino community a lot, you know that it's not just immigration. That's a passion point. That's a huge issue. It's not the only issue. Latinos need jobs and everything, all the other main issues that go that help them as well. And so it is kind of interesting, kind of like where we go from here to me, I think, on you, because you're right. Apathy could totally be something that they want to fight against. And so they're going to have to energize. And then you go into, well, how could you energize Latinos? You might be able to energize them with a Hispanic VP candidate or something like that, which is obviously something that where Obama had to get an elder statesman, somebody who's established like a Biden, Hillary, you feel, might need a little bit of that, some youth, or maybe not a white man, maybe someone who's black or someone who's Hispanic. That could be interesting.
So ultimately, Adrian, as a reporter, this notion of using doublespeak, you know, this language of saying the president is partaking in doublespeak, it doesn't feel so good as a term that one, even as a journalist, is using towards the president.
Mm-hmm. No, it definitely doesn't feel good. People don't like to hear it. I think the journalists, we want to try to keep them honest. I think that one thing that hurt them is when they're talking about the politics change, like we said, I think unaccompanied minors was out there. Now, do they mean the politics changed, or were they looking at these poll numbers and they said this will get better and it didn't get better? So like you said, I mean, if he didn't act at the end of the year, I think that he would be tarnished in some ways and definitely hurt by not acting. And that's why I get the sense that the White House is saying, you don't understand. As soon as the election's over, before the holidays, he's going to act. So that's what's going to be interesting.
All right, Adrian Carrasquillo, we will have you back to find out who was right,
yes,
you or me. All right. Adrian Carrasquillo is the editor for Latino coverage and a reporter at BuzzFeed. Good to talk with you, Adrian.
Thank you.
Las lluvias de febrero ya anunciaban este fin. La casa está vacía en la...
For spoken word artist Quique Aviles, words manifest themselves in a concrete way. That's especially true when he's talking about the Washington, D.C. neighborhood where he grew up, Columbia Heights. It was once a poor and abandoned community that's now become a magnet for moneyed hipsters. Walking the streets of Columbia Heights one day recently, Aviles improvised this lexicon of his neighborhood.
My name is Enrique Aviles, I'm better known as Quique Aviles. I'm a poet, actor, troublemaker. ¿Qué pasó? ¿Cómo estamos? Americans in general, it's a Q-U-I-Q-U-E, so it's Quickie, Kaiki, Quick. I did a spell check on my name back in the old computers, the 90s. Yeah, I got Cook, Kaka, Cuckoo. I got all kinds of things except my name. My name is Quique Aviles, and this is some of the words that live in me in my neighborhood. The park. El parque used to be a place where you went and hung out with your friends after work. Now it's
which you avoid, you know, because you don't know anybody at the park. And a lot of white babies get taken there by their brown nannies. Just walk over here. I used to live right above this dry cleaner right here. I used to live with these three guys. It was four of us. We were all bachelors. And we used to party a lot. And there was a Safeway here, a grocery store. We used to call it the ghetto Safeway because, you know, most of the produce and meats and stuff were half rotten. I mean, this place was quite a trip. So we used to blow all our money on partying on the weekends. And on Sundays, we would be hungover and in pain. So we would go into the ghetto Safeway and steal stuff to make soup to cure our hungover. So I live right on the second floor of that building right there. And now it's all surrounded by very posh, very luxurious looking stuff. I'm Kike Aguiles, and this is the language that surrounds me. Dog. I said dog, un perro. I love dogs. And old Columbia Heights, dog knows how to speak street language. And the dog goes, yo, what's up, man? I'm the dog. And it's also bilingual. So the dog can say, hey, ¿qué onda? ¿Qué pasa, perro? And the new gentrifier dog says, I want an arugula sandwich. Gentrification. I don't quite get it. I know that the majority of gentrifiers mean well, but somehow they don't show it. You know, I've lived here for almost 34 years. And I've never met such a cold group of folks. People that don't look you in the eye. People that are really interested in just hanging out with people that look and sound like themselves. And then they move into neighborhoods where, you know, we put up with a lot of shit, you know? And we stuck it out. And then these folks just kind of swoop in and take over. And that, to me, is offensive. Because there's a complete denial of the history that is there. Well, I was thinking about, we go to that place that is next to Chipotle, what is it called, Taco Loco? Yeah, they have $3 Blue Moons and Thursdays. Yeah, Jeff is gonna join us. Yeah, he just came back from New York. He's kind of depressed because then, you know, that lobbying job, that fell through. Yeah, so we just get together and, you know, cheer him up. So we'll just meet by the park. Bring the dog. Yeah. Okay. I'll see you. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Bet. My name is Kike Aviles.
My name is Kike Aviles. My name is Kike Aviles. Sí, efectivamente, Kike Aviles. And that's my bus.
Latinos do call me Kike, but black folks, they just use my first letter. So I go by Q. Yo, Q. This exact corner used to be improvised basketball court. Broken glass, semi-abandoned buildings, a lot of boarded up buildings that were still left over from the riots after the Martin Luther King's assassination in, I think it was 68. It was pretty much abandoned, you know, neglected. It was full of trash. And this is precisely where I landed when I came here in 1980. And my family was one of the first Latino families to move into the neighborhood. And it was an all-black neighborhood. When I came here, I was 15. My family basically kidnapped me, forced me to come here because I was being sought out by the death squads in El Salvador. I expected to land in a white world full of blondes and fancy cars and all this stuff, and I landed in a black neighborhood.
Hola.
¿Cómo estamos? ¿Todo bien? Vaya, tranquilo. ¿Cómo? No, le acabo de regalar un dólar. I'm Kike Aviles, and this is the language that surrounds me. Rehabilitate. People have tried to rehabilitate us by teaching us to serve them really well. People try to rehabilitate us from our addictions rehabilitate us from our habits, from our old countries, rehabilitate our housing so that we can be put out, and rehabilitate us through an educational system that teaches us to dislike ourselves. I'm Kike Aguiles, and this is the language that surrounds me.
There you go. Got it.
What you got? So what you got? That is the question, you know. What you got, you know? If you move here, and if you mean well, what you got? You know, what resources are you bringing in? How can we use your connections, your networks, your wealth, your position? And how do we bring that to create a new community? You know, because obviously the old community, it's on its way out. And there's only a few holdouts, but you ain't going nowhere, and we ain't going nowhere, so we're stuck together. So what you got?
Kike Aviles with producer David Shulman. To hear Kike perform one of his poems, visit our website, latinousa.org. Okay, mis queridos and queridas, since our show is about language, we wanted to give you a glimpse inside our editorial process and some of the decisions we've made about the language we use on this show. So, I never like using the word minority, and we try not to use it on our air because it has a connotation of something being less than or worth less than, and we know that Latinos are not that. Now, you heard Guy Garcia tell us earlier how we're already a multicultural majority nation. Here's Guy now on the redefinition of the word minority.
Well, minorities used to mean certain people of color defined by the census that were a numerical minority, but also a cultural minority. They were on the fringes. They were on the outside. And the expectation is that sooner or later they would turn into the guy on the Quaker Oats cereal box. But that's not what really ever happened. The melting pot, if it really existed over time, was also an ingredient in the soup. In effect, the pot also melts. So the very definition of this American mainstream that people are supposed to melt into was itself melting. It was morphing. It was merging. It was being transformed by the people that come into it. That's always been true. So I don't even know how you can use minority unless you're talking about non-Hispanic whites who live in Idaho and are completely left out of the multicultural reality that exists in this country today. Sometimes I talk about people like that who are not just opposed, but somehow not even understanding what's actually happened in this country in the last few decades as the new immigrants to America. Because really, it's the tables have turned in the sense those people need help to acculturate into this nation we call the United States, which is a multicultural country, and we have to be patient with them and allow them to slowly become America as it exists today, not as it exists in some nostalgic, idealistic past.
Stay tuned for more redefinitions from Guy Garcia later in our program. But coming up on Latino USA...
In Spanish, you know, it's not just a bad word, it's how you say it and the rhythm behind it.
Stay with us. No se vaya.
En el pasado fui cliente. El de atrás está para empujarte. Amas hacia lo que nunca fue. Aquí en que este por estar. No es nada personal. No es nada personal. Yo llego después de que se va. Uno menos uno solo centro de gravedad. Eres el recuerdo de una memoria distinta. Pero solo hablo por hablar. No es nada personal.
Hace un tiempo que partí. Sin saber a dónde ir, ya quiero.
estoy tan feliz. Si sabes lo que quieres, ya no dudes en partir. Deja tus cosas y venir. Acá te vamos a esperar.
Welcome back to Your Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. And today's program is all about language. So, as we were planning out the show, we found ourselves thinking about a special set of words. You know, the bad words.
Bad words, dirty, filthy, foul, vile.
This is the late comedian George Carlin's classic routine, The Seven Dirty Words, which is all about, well, curse words.
Street talk, gutter talk, locker room language, barracks talk.
Now, you have to use your imagination a little here because, of course, we can't say any of these words on the radio. Because if we were to do that, this guy would come after us.
Hi, I'm Mark Memmott.
Mark is the Standards and Practices Editor at NPR.
You know, you could call me the internal police.
One of Mark's jobs is to make sure that NPR programs keep it clean. And here's the rationale.
One reason is we don't want to offend people. We don't want to drive people away. We don't want them to turn the radio off. And the second reason is that these are public broadcasting airwaves that we deal with, and they are regulated by the FCC, and there have been court decisions that uphold the FCC's authority to regulate them and to decide that in certain times of the day, there are certain words that just shouldn't be heard.
It's just like we've decided there be some words we won't say all the time, and I was just trying to find out which words they were, for sure, all of them. I wanted a list, because nobody gives you a list.
Well, There's a list in the public imagination, and it's mostly thanks to George Carlin.
So we got to wondering, what are the seven dirty palabras in Spanish? Because George Carlin never made a version en español, right? So in order to figure this out unscientifically, we enlisted the help of Felipe Esparza. He's a comedian from Los Angeles and a pretty funny one who in 2010 won the NBC show The Last Comic Standing.
Yeah, I was so happy to win Last Comic Standing. You know, I never won anything in my life, but now since I won, I've been randomly selected at every airport in America.
So, Felipe, do you think that there are, in fact, you know, the equivalent of the seven dirty words in Spanish?
Man, there must be like 100. Because sometimes you take one word and it means a total different meaning when you say it in a different tone.
So do you like swearing more in Spanish than in English?
I think when I swear in Spanish during my act, it's much funnier than in English. It gets a better laugh. The people listening, they feel a part of it. Okay, he's one of us. And then the people listening who are not Spanish or Mexican, they're okay, that's part of his culture. Let's laugh.
I think for me, when I swear in English, it's kind of straightforward, a little bit angrier. I mean, they're monosyllabic, right? I mean, it's like, mm, or, mm. Whereas in Spanish, it's like, or like, you know, there's like, it's not just the one syllable kind of thing.
It's like you might say, let go of me, but in Spanish, suéltame, hijo de tu p***.
I would have used the C one there. I thought you were going to say, suéltame, c***, you know? I remember so much that when we knew that Dad, who is very serious, we always knew that he was really upset if he ever swore in English. So the first time that my dad said, damn it, oui.
Oh, my dad would get mad and say, and then I know he was serious when he said, Samanagan.
So I want to ask you, Felipe, because you're a performer. So when you're doing stuff on Spanish language television or English language television, how are you processing what words you can or can't say? Or do you just, you know, let it rip and let the chips fall where they may?
I really don't know what words those are in the Spanish language, because they get away with so much.
Have you ever heard of the show José Luis Sin Censura?
Yeah, that show was wild, man.
Estoy embarazada.
¿Cómo?
Sí, mamá. Oh.
Estoy embarazada.
Yo 8, 10, 12 horas para atender.
It got so wild that actually there was a whole campaign to get them off the air.
Yeah, that show was like Jerry Springer with steroids.
Jerry Springer on steroids in Spanish.
This is Jessica Gonzalez, Vice President of the National Hispanic Media Coalition.
It was the most disgusting program, airing some things that you would never see or hear on English language media. This was not your run-of-the-mill indecency. This was blatant nudity of all kinds of parts, violent beating of women and of LGBT people, paired with indecent, obscene language.
Okay. José Luis Sin Censura bleeped some curse words, but they let many more through, especially anti-gay slurs. So, in 2011, González's organization filed an indecency complaint against the show's producer, Lieberman Broadcasting.
And ultimately what happened is that Lieberman Broadcasting settled with the FCC, agreed to pay a $110,000 fine to the U.S. Treasury.
José Luis Sin Censura was an extreme case, and thanks to the campaign against the show, it got taken off the air. But it's not the only place where bad language slips into Spanish TV and radio.
We've had several complaints in the past of radio broadcasters who were essentially broadcasting pornography without any repercussions.
Looking through the FCC's public records, we found that the agency filed an action called a Notice of Apparent Liability 67 times against broadcasters since the year 2000. But only 8 of those actions had to do with Spanish language programming. Now, the FCC only investigates a case when they get complaints. So part of the discrepancy might be that Spanish speakers aren't submitting as many complaints. González believes that the biggest issue is the lack of Spanish-speaking staff at the agency. According to the FCC, only 3% of their employees are Latino.
This is not like some random language. This is a very pervasive language. It's the second most spoken language in the U.S. And in order to really fulfill their statutory duties, they need to staff up so that they can enforce their rules.
González says she's not interested in being the indecency police. She just wants to see the same standards applied to both languages. All right, Felipe, so as a comedian, what do you think about all of this? Because obviously with José Luis Sin Censura, there was a sense that there was hate speech involved. But in a lot of other cases, if nobody's being hurt, is saying bad words on air really so bad?
I don't know. I would like to know who said these were bad words and why are they bad? Or when does it become too offensive? Like, how many letters does it take for it to be offensive?
So you say we shouldn't be policing the airwaves too much.
Oh, no, man. Leave my novelas the way they are.
Don't touch Felipe's novelas. Comedian Felipe Esparza spoke to us from Los Angeles. You know how in TV shows, at the end of every segment, right before a commercial break, the music gets louder and more intense? And then you find out something crazy that turns the whole plot on its head, and the music explodes, and then it cuts to black? Who writes that music? Well, one person is Juan Carlos Rodriguez. He's a Los Angeles-based music composer who's worked on a number of telenovelas and who now composes for Hulu's Islos High and for Matador on the El Rey network. Some insights now into the language of television music.
It's beautiful. What is that? It's something my father used to play.
My name is Juan Carlos Rodriguez from Venezuela. I'm a music composer. I've been composing for Telemundo. I've done a dozen of soap operas, 130 episode projects.
Reina Ortiz acepta como esposo a Victor de Rosas.
Soap opera comes from radio. So everything was in front of the microphone. And it translated into TV. Everything is in your face. Everything is very obvious. The music reflects that too. It's more, I don't want to say exaggerated, but I mean, a little bit more intense. Recently in 2013, I had a call to come meet the director of this new web series called Islos High.
My boyfriend Pedro and I met about a year ago, and we live together. He sells cars, and I work as a nanny on the west side.
So you take care of some rich kid instead of yours? I'm impressed.
Islos High, based here in East LA, it's a high school stories. It's drama. It's more youthful. So I use what is called hybrid scores. It's a combination of orchestral elements and electronic elements.
You're the one who made me try out. You're just jealous you didn't make it.
Or you did not just say that.
It blends really nicely.
Soli, I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
Yes, you did.
I used to be embarrassed to say that I never listened to rock and roll. I know, I know. But, you know, I listen to Beatles, and I will listen to jazz music. Dave Grusin is a great jazz piano player. I mean, he's a great composer and performer. He has a very unique style. And then John Barry. That's another composer that really marked my life as a composer, and I wanted to be like them.
Either way, hope you make it, Mano.
From April, a music supervisor was looking for composers who can bring a really nice American sounding score with some hints of Latin Hispanic music. That was Matador, co-created by director Robert Rodriguez for his El Rey network.
Pleased to be back in the City of Angels. I haven't killed anyone here since 1998.
One of the first descriptions that I got from Matador was that it was the Latin James Bond. So I needed to compose a really nice theme and harmony, a chord progression that will suggest that spy-like kind of music.
No practice today.
This guy gets infiltrated into a soccer team here in LA, and then the team owner gets into some dirty business, and he's after him.
Why? Did something happen?
No.
Lots of guitars, very organic sounding with some electronics. There's a really cool chord progression that I created for Matador, kind of chromatic, and it gives that a spy, a cool guy like James Bond is. In this case, Tony Bravo, which is the main character from Matador. It's so simple. It's dun dee dun, dun dee dun. That's it.
Host, we can't do that.
But then, the way you grab that motif and make it fit, I really manipulate this motif in different ways. I could do like half a slower, twice as fast, or I can truncate it and just tune ding. I mean, there's no formulas here. That's one of the things that I love about composing, that I never know what's going to end up happening. I just know I'm going to find it. I just know that. Yeah. And as I said, the music forms itself in front of me, and I'm just helping it.
You can hear Juan Carlos Rodriguez's work on Islos High, available on Hulu, and on Matador, on the El Rey network. Finally, one last word of wisdom for you today, queridos. And that word is diversity. Guy Garcia now, with the last of our redefinitions for this language-focused episode of Latino USA.
William Gibson, the writer, said that the future is here, it's just not evenly distributed yet. So even though in most cities and even most states, and certainly all over the country now, you see a growing recognition and reality of multicultural and diversity. And certainly most corporations and organizations are starting to appreciate the value of diversity and all the good things that come from it. There are a lot of people that still don't understand that it's a positive thing, that it really goes to the heart of what the United States has always been about, you know, the energy of immigrants, their optimism, their industriousness. Is a huge upside, not to mention the fact that they keep us from sliding into a negative population country, which causes all kinds of other economic and social problems. So diversity is kind of up for grabs. Depends on who's saying it, and they'll usually channel it through their concerns, whether it's reaching diverse audiences with their products or shoppers or voters. Or just understanding the place they live and the people around them better. In today's world, diversity is not just including Asians, African Americans, and Blacks. It's also including white people who have diverse attitudes, like I said before, who are intermarried or cohabitating or living in high multicultural concentration areas. These are places like San Francisco's Mission District, which used to be considered a Latino barrio and now is like one of the highest priced and most trendy places in Northern California. Same thing with East Texas, you know, artists, musicians, the tech community goes into that. And increasingly, it skews younger, always has been, but now with the rise of technology, engineers can come from any country. So language and culture is an accepted part of everybody's background. I mean, if you go to Williamsburg today, you see like giant beer gardens. That's a German tradition, and it's fine. But somehow people are finally kind of waking up to the point that everybody has a cultural ingredient to contribute, and they're all equally acceptable and equally valuable.
Thanks, Guy. Guy Garcia is the president of New Mainstream Initiatives at Ethnifax, a market research firm. That's it for this week. But before we go, we have a very big announcement. The Futuro Media Group is launching our first ever television series on PBS and the World Channel. It's called America by the Numbers, and it's dedicated to reporting on the massive demographic shifts we're living through. Our first episode airs next week, and it's called Mainstream USA. And it's a trip to Clarkston, Georgia, where refugees have changed the city.
I can identify with a lot of people in this city because what they're going through, I've been through, and what I've been through, they're getting ready to go through. Prejudice head has never stopped being raised in this town. It's quiet. Call it closet prejudice.
That's our new documentary series called America by the Numbers on PBS and on the World Channel and online at americabythenumbers.org. Keep an eye out, queridos and queridas, and tell your friends and family to watch and write in and let us know what you think about America by the Numbers and journalism about the new America. And until next week, that's Latino USA. Our program is produced by A.C. Valdez, Lita Hartman, Daisy Rosario, Marlon Bishop, Michael Simon Johnson, Camilo Vargas, and Antonia Cerejido. Our engineer is Cornelius McMoyler. Nadia Raymond is our music consultant. Our interns are Julia Shu and Laura Calzada. Nancy Trujillo makes it all happen. Our show was founded at the University of Texas at Austin. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next week. And in the meantime, look for us on Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr. And I'll see you on my Instagram. Hasta la próxima.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation and by the Marguerite Casey Foundation, dedicated to achieving a more just and equitable society for all, and the Ford Foundation, dedicated to working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide.
Trying to sound peeved. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Inada, maker of the DreamWave massage chair with body scanning technology and shiatsu point detection. Learn more at dreamwavechair.com. And Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring with a floor finder app for iPad and iPhone. Learn more at lumberliquidators.com. And the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries, on the web at lemelson.org. This is NPR.